And we're back with fresh bruises, fresh welts.
I just went and nobody was around, so I went and kind of just hit myself with the belt a few times.
I threw myself out the window earlier.
Got surprisingly turned on.
It was very peculiar. Weirdest boner of my life.
Yeah, the EMTs say the only thing that prevented me from certain death was my erection. I bounced off the ground like Tigger in Winnie the Pooh.
Exactly. After dark shit tonight.
That's right. Yeah, this is how we do on After Dark for our Patreon subscribers. If we haven't alienated you by now, we assume you're on board. The defenestration of Jacob Everett. That sounds like could be a great like NPR novel, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a certain ring to it, doesn't it? The defenestration of Jacob Everett. I like it. Again, Jacob, thank you so much for your time and coming on the show. We love having you on.
It's my pleasure.
So nice to hear your impression. Some of the things you said were insightful in a way that I hadn't thought about it in the way maybe you had. And that's one of the great things about his work is you're going to kind of, there's a Rorschach quality to it. You're going to see different things, but you were making some very interesting points, but especially that triptych as being kind of meta for his own career. Now we're in the crucifixion. We're looking back at my work now. So, you know, we're no longer at the base of the crucifixion. This is the crucifixion, and it happens in a bedroom, which I think is very interesting.
Sure.
Well, I want to get to the dictator business, but Brad, it sounds like you found an interesting website that I was wanting to
who could it be, right? And I thought, well, I can name a handful of dictators, you know, off the top of my head, but let me get the list of dictators and scroll around in here.
What wonderful URL have you alighted on?
So ultimately where you want to go for the definitive list of dictators is something called dictatorspage.fandom.com/wiki. That's important. dictatorspage.fandom.com/wiki. This is the definitive. I just think it's hilarious that there's a fandom. If you really want to know about the dictator extended cinematic universe, this is where you want to go to get all of the details about your favorite dictators.
Very good. Well, I believe either of you can guess the dictator that he wanted to be, go on.
Let me go first because I got somebody queued up. I'm going to go with Ahmet Bej Zogu, who is the dictator of Albania from 1925 to 1939. In 1928, come on.
It's a good one. Tell me more. I dated an Albanian in New York. She's an Americanized Albanian, but Albania is a fascinating country to me.
He declared himself 1925, he was the president of Albania. 1928, he declared himself king of the Albanians, King Zog I, King Zog the First. He was later ousted by Mussolini.
Okay. Interesting. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. I read somewhere that Albania, Zog I of Albania.
Yeah.
He looks like a real... No, this was not the person this is so funny. He looks like he just got off the set of Fawlty Towers.
I guess he's not the most attractive.
Apparently, Albania is a country where you can still use like your electricity bill as ID. Like it's weird backwater.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful landscape.
Sure, but and no shade on the Albanians. I want both of my kidneys. So I don't. No offense. Seriously, if you're an Albanian listener of Art of Darkness, and you subscribe to the Patreon, get into the Telegram. The link is in the
let us know
on
about
the website.
Zog.
I want to know about King Zog the First, and
I want to know about having a Zog occupied government. That's what
okay,
I want to know.
All right. They literally had a Zog occupied, a Zogog.
Yeah.
A Zog occupied government. Yeah. You're really skirting the third rail here tonight, Brad, which was the name of one of Bacon's favorite bars in London was the third. I'm kidding. Oh, yeah. That'd be perfect. So good. Jacob, what dictator do you think Francis Bacon thought was extremely handsome and he wanted to be sodomized?
I didn't go as creative as Brad, but I mean, I just figured it'd be good old fashioned Adolf Hitler. Just because, you know, that would, I'm just trying to think what would be the most shocking one to say. And obviously the one who'd be responsible for the bombing of Britain. But then obviously that doesn't make sense because, you know, Hitler was a bit of an effete artist himself, and that wouldn't really be Francis Bacon's bag. I mean, maybe he would prefer more of a Goring person, but, you know, so that's my, you know, thinking and then retraction of my thinking. But, you know, I'll stick with, I'll do a, you know, getting a tag team by, I don't know, Goring and... and I don't know, Idi Amin or something like that.
Oh, Idi Amin's big.
Okay,
tough.
We're getting a little closer. We forgot to ask the closing question once again. So before I tell you the name of the dictator, I'm going to ask you both, starting with you, Jacob, who do you think, or what do you think Francis Bacon would be doing now?
Man.
Painting,
of course. I'm trying to think, obviously, the big thing right now in art is all the NFTs and stuff, and I'm trying to think if he would be down with that. On reflex, I think he would hate it, but I think he would be into them just because he would see that all of his art world sort of colleagues hated them, and he's the contrarian. So I would just say he would totally cash in on the NFT wave.
Could be.
What about a line of Francis Bacon BDSM shit? Like what? tied to NFTs, right? And he's got like a pop-up in London where it's a mix of these things.
Yeah, he collaborates with Rick Owens, you know, does some crazy fashion stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think he could have his own. He'd have his own liquor. I think he'd have his own champagne or his own, maybe his own whiskey or something. I don't know. Right. What do you think, Brad? What would he be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think he would continue to paint. And I think I'm going to go kind of the opposite way. Not that he's going to get out of BDSM, but I think his paintings would be progressively the blood would be drained out of them, so to speak. And not that the life would be drained out of them, but I think that bull painting we saw to me was, if I would have seen it without the whole story of his life and his other paintings in that context, I don't know how much I would have reacted to it, but seeing it there, I felt like he's was gradually starting to approach some kind of pure form. I think we would have seen a kinder, gentler Francis Bacon in his later years.
Yeah, maybe he could have. Yeah, right. Well, and this question is always a little abstract, right?
Sure.
Because it's like, well, what if he's living now? How old would he be? And you know, it's just like, if maybe we need to rephrase the question, like if Francis Bacon was alive today in his prime, you know, what would he be doing now? Yeah. Like if the soul, it's almost like the whole of Bacon could come back and just be now, what would he be doing? I don't know. I like the idea of him, like, as it became clearer and clearer how much he was influencing cinema. I mean, imagine if he pulled a Giger and really designed for, what's the name of this horror director who did Hereditary and Midsommar?
Ari Aster.
What if he and Ari Aster got together and he designed the the monster or some of the horrific, you know, I don't know, something like that. That might seem like stooping to Bacon, but then again, maybe not. I mean, if he'd gotten excited about it, you know, it could have happened. Right.
I definitely see a lot of Francis Bacon in this new blonde movie that's out. So I could definitely
is that right?
Be involved in product. Yeah, because it's all a very sort of dark sadomasochistic kind of stuff. So I can definitely see him doing sort of production design for that, production design for like Lost Highway or Inland Empire. I can see him teaming up with, you know, hottest collab with David Lynch.
Yeah,
that would be
makes sense.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I think David Lynch's paintings, if you've ever seen them, I mean, I think you can definitely.
They're Baconian. Definitely.
Yeah. Baconian. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to read this bit about the. All right, so let's see here. During the 70s, the original hurly-burly of the colony room changed. There were still tumultuous days, but inevitably the membership had moved on, and the so-called School of London or Muriel's Boys no longer came there. By now, when Francis flung open the door to see who was inside, it was more a case of lucky dip. If he recognized someone he liked, the smile burst across his face. When the television personality Michael Parkinson told a mutual friend that he would never go to the colony because it was full of failures, it amused me to enter it that same afternoon and find Francis with the fashion designer Thea Porter and the actor Tom Baker. Though when I asked Francis if he would appear in a series I was preparing called Success Story, he recoiled. Are you mad? I'm not a success. Now, if it were failures you were doing, then I might be interested. Francis continued to be unpredictable. Jeffrey Bernard remembers the conversation one Friday, which hovered around sex and death. The only interesting things, by the way, sex and death. Francis seemed amused by both subjects. And he used to quiz me about being heterosexual as though I was a creature from outer space. He cleared a table of American tourist matrons with one of his loud, outspoken remarks during a natural lull in the lunchtime noise. Which woman do you most fancy in the entire world? He asked me. I don't know. What am I supposed to say? Ava Gardner? Sid Carice? Who? Sid Carice? Mm-hmm. What a daft question. Anyway, who do you most fancy in the entire world? He replied with a languid yet loud tone. Do you know? I think I'd really like to be fucked by Colonel Gaddafi.
Ah, there it is.
Oh, boy.
Exit the Americans.
Yeah.
So he walked these American ladies with that quote. Oh, boy.
Gotta be on the receiving end. And he's on the receiving end of it. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's another interesting story. Like Cocteau, Picasso, Dali, and Warhol, Francis was asked to design a label for the latest vintage of Chateau Mouton Rothschild. And though the commission was unpaid, it was welcomed by the artists, who were rewarded with crates of rare wine. Francis's first attempt was rejected as impractical. The picture is now in an Israeli museum, but he was asked again for the 1990 Premier Cru by the Baroness Philippine de Rothschild, and he delivered a small painting to her at the end of 1991 in a shopping bag at her hotel near Harrods, with the explanation that he had to go out to buy some socks, defying doctor's orders to rest at home. Characteristically, he said the picture was awful and wanted to do it again. The Baroness remembers that he shrugged, but you can have it if you want. She replied, of course we do. The poignant picture shows an outstretched hand clasping a glass of wine. The poignancy lies in the knowledge that this was probably his last work. So it is satisfying to learn that this particular vintage is outstanding. It will reach perfection as the next century begins.
Wow.
So that's kind of lovely. And again, I just love that contrast of high and low. He's meeting the, you know, Baroness de Rothschild, and he brings it in like a shopping bag. I got to go get some socks.
Yeah. see you later. Yeah.
Jacob, what happened to you that you saw this painting of Lucian Freud, this triptych, and you were just taken and you went down the Bacon hole? Like,
I guess so. I mean, I had always been somewhat aware of him just because, like, I grew up, like, my mom is like an art history major, so I always knew sort of about him. But then after seeing it, and I mean, I can't understate how important it is, not just bacon, but like for art in general, like how it really is a different experience seeing paintings in person versus like seeing them like on a screen or even like on a page. Like you really get the sense, like when you see the brush strokes, you're basically seeing the indentations by the artist, him or herself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, once you see an artist's work in person, that kind of influences your perception of them in general.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah.
I have another little bit that I left out of the main part of this bacon coverage we're doing. I love this. So he had he exhibited on the Rue de Beaux-Arts in Paris 6 years after the triumph. At the Grand Palais. So this might have been right around the late 70s. The crowds were so dense that the police had to close the street. Within 24 hours, 8,000 Parisians had flocked to the Claude Bernard Gallery. The artist himself proved a remarkable attraction as he sat in a cafe around the corner, instantly recognized and recognizable. Immensely gratified, Francis told Sam White, the Evening Standard columnist, "It is not only the most beautiful city in the world, but the most artistically alert." White commented, "If Bacon has a spiritual home over and above any city, including his own, it is Paris. He is the first to recognize it and respond to it." 10 years later, in October of 1987, he enjoyed a similar success at the Lalande Gallery, though only 14 paintings were exhibited, three of which were for sale, including a triptych for £2.4 million. Newspapers referred to Le Myth Bacon, and Le Monde broke precedent by running the story on its front page. "C'est la sensation de Paris," said Francois Galliard, the gallery assistant. Francis was delighted. "I don't know why the French seem to like me, but what I do know is that the critics in England loathe everything that I do." It's hard to know if he believed this or wished to please the French, probably both. Michael Wishart attended the exhibition with Helen Lesor. In the afternoon, there were just a lot of fashion models up ladders. But when we went back at 6:30 or 7, we found the Boulevard Haussmann blocked with traffic, TV and film crews. I wrote to Francis, "Not only couldn't I get into the gallery, I couldn't get into the street. More crowds and for a royal wedding gathered than a private view, though in a sense it was both. The Parisians chanted, Bacon, Bacon, Bacon." And when Wishart, Pat, you like my French accent?
Yeah, it's good.
Bacon, Bacon. And Bacon, Francis, and when Wishart passed the home of Serge Gainsbourg, he saw the sprayed graffiti on the wall. "Only Francis Bacon is more wonderful than you."
Hmm.
Yeah. Huh. Can you imagine? What a joy for someone of his disposition and his background to achieve that kind of success in his life.
Wild. Yeah.
Really, really happy.
Yeah. No
that's
painters.
Like some rock star stuff.
Yeah. No painters get hailed like that anymore at all.
Not really. No.
That I can think of.
He's like a pop, almost like a pop icon.
I mean, like Damien Hirst drops something and I feel like everybody just kind of rolls their eyes and somehow it like operate the money laundering scheme he's involved with keeps rolling, you know, but
he's in some of the, what was that documentary that we were watching, Jacob?
There was the, I watched like the Francis Bacon Brush with Violence.
Oh,
he was in that one.
Yeah, and Damien Hirst is in that one.
Yeah, a couple others. He like, I think he owns that 1933 crucifixion painting, that early one that he did.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, there's just, it's hard to imagine something like this happening now for a painter or much less a writer or much less, you know, some podcasters. I mean, it'd be nice to be hailed in Paris.
Grand Prix podcast.
Yeah.
Whatever French is for podcast.
Out of darkness. That's great. We gotta cover a lot more French people.
Yeah, that's a good point. They don't like the French in France. You gotta pick like artists that they like. We're doing well with picking France.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Good call.
Yeah.
Good
they
call.
Always love like American like pulp novelists. Like yeah. I know James Ellroy is fucking huge over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I love that schlock stuff.
I love it. I finally read some Ellroy. I really got into that. Yeah. We're talking about one day, you know, Art of Darkness, depending on how far we take this, there might be an Art of Darkness book club. Well, you know, we might do, who knows? There's so much we could do. Yeah. That could be really fun because we love covering dead artists, but there, you know, there's some limitations. We can't touch living artists, but if we did a book club, we could do books from a living artist. Yeah. I really like, that novel I read from James Ellroy,
I really still haven't read any. I gotta get.
I told you that it was like this is the Cold 6000, and it's like it's Don DeLillo on coke.
Yeah, I like absolutely. It. That description will sell. That book will leap into my shopping cart. So
Libra on coke.
I like it. I like it.
I'm gonna read a little more of this interview just in the interest of getting us kind of. Staying focused on Bacon. This is the 62 interview. Have you ever had any desire at all to do an abstract painting? I've had a desire to do forms, as when I originally did three forms at the base of the crucifixion, three studies for figures at the base of the crucifixion, the first big painting. They were influenced by the Picasso things that were done at the end of the 20s. And I think there's a whole area there suggested by Picasso, which in a way has been unexplored, of organic form that relates to the human image, but is a complete distortion of it. After that triptych, now this is the interviewer, after that triptych, you start to paint in a more figurative way. Was it more out of a positive desire to paint figuratively or more out of a feeling that you couldn't develop that kind of organic form further at that time? Bacon. Well, one of the pictures I did in 1946, the painting with the umbrella that we looked at, the one like a butcher shop, came to me as an accident. I was attempting to make a bird alighting on a field, and it may have been bound up in some way with the three forms that have gone before, but suddenly the lines that I'd drawn suggested something totally different. And out of this suggestion arose this picture. I had no intention to do this picture. I never thought of it in that way. It was like one continuous accident mounting on top of another. Did the bird alighting suggest the umbrella or what? It suddenly suggested an opening up into another area of feeling altogether. And then I made these things. I gradually made them so that I didn't think the bird suggested the umbrella. It suddenly suggested this whole image. And I carried it out very quickly in about 3 or 4 days. It often happens, does it? This transformation of the image in the course of working. Bacon. It does, but now I always hope it will arrive more positively. Now I feel that I want to do very, very specific objects, though made out of something which is completely irrational from the point of view of being an illustration. I want to do very specific things like portraits, and they will be portraits of the people. But when you come to analyze them, you just won't know, or it would be very hard to see how the image is made up at all. And this is why, in a way, it is very wearing, because it is really a complete accident. An accident in what sense? Because I don't know how the form can be made. For instance, the other day I painted a head of somebody, head, 1961, and what made the sockets of the eyes, the nose, the mouth were, when you analyze them, just forms, which had nothing to do with eyes, nose, or mouth. But the paint moving from one contour into another made a likeness of this person I was trying to paint. I stopped. I thought for a moment. I'd got something much nearer to what I want. Then the next day I tried to take it further and tried to make it more poignant, more near, and I lost the image completely, because this image is a kind of tightrope walk between what is called figurative painting and abstraction. It will go right out from abstraction, but will really have nothing to do with it. It's an attempt to bring the figurative thing up onto the nervous system more violently and more poignantly.
Interesting. So, yeah, interesting.
I can see why people might compare him to Burroughs and the cut-ups, and there's just some element of chance, which maybe you don't think about when you think about painting, except in maybe in an extreme way when you think about someone like Pollock. But I just love the idea of the artist Bacon discovering the painting as he goes along. I love that. That's often the case when I write a play. I kind of do the same thing. It's like, I don't really know what's going to happen. The characters emerge.
It all
and suddenly
starts to develop itself.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Brad, thanks for going late. Yeah. I know it's already tomorrow. It's still not midnight in the central time zone. Yeah, so I will get this episode posted today. Boom. So we did our first doubleheader. Nice. Jacob, thanks for hanging, man.
Yeah, dude. Hopefully, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're a mensch. We'll see you on the Bird website. And you know, maybe, you know, if you have a nice color printer at home, guys, just print out a portrait of Gaddafi.
And put it up on the headboard.
Yeah, put it up on the ceiling. Yeah, and let your mind wander.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
All right. Good night, you guys.
Good night.
Talking to you.
Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Later.